So I haven't seen any of these questions. So it started out from a tweet where someone said, like, here's 10 questions to get to know people. Is that right?
Yeah. Listener of the pod. And I think your friend Blake Burge, I think is his name. He had tweeted out a thing like, you know, whatever. There are many questions, but few will change your life. Here's 10 questions that will change your life. And, you know, thread goes viral. So, by the way, you know, normally it's kind of like eye roll.
No, it's good. There's this thing, Ben, you'll have to look it up. Again, no research here. There's this thing I remember years ago. It was called like the New York Times, like 21 questions. And it was like, here, ask these 21 questions on
to
a first
partner,
date.
Right?
Well, on a first date, I thought. And it was like, here's how you get intimate with people. And like, as a single 21-year-old, I read that and I was like, oh, like, here's how I can hook up with girls. And I remember those questions, and they're very similar to what these guys' questions are. But it was like, when did your father make you cry? Or like it was like pretty deep questions like that. Right. And so I'm down with these questions.
So I actually read these questions and I was like, these are actually good questions. But the way he presented it, I think, you know, no offense, this is how most people do Twitter. It's like, here's some general advice or some general questions. What's interesting to me is not the question, but it's kind of seeing somebody struggle with their answer to that question. So, for example, he would ask a question like, and I'll give you the first question, which is going to come out here in a second. So, Ben, read question number one. And I'll explain how he tweeted it and how I think we should answer it instead. Read question one.
Question one is,
on
in what areas of my life am I settling?
Okay, so what areas of my life am I settling? That's a powerful question. It's a good thought-provoking question. Now, the rest of his tweet was like, you know, just enough or just okay is not good enough. Identify the areas of your life you're just settling. So to me, that's the part where it was like, no, Blake, I want to hear your answer. Like, you tell me, like, if you're going to put out one of these bullshit ass threads, that's like, you know, generic thread to try to get likes. I think that the next level of this like bullshit thread thing is people are going to get a little more vulnerable. They're going to put their actual answers in the thread rather than general advice.
Who's invented this theme I'm seeing? So like Upworthy was like, here's 10 things you're not going to believe. Number 7, this new one that I'm seeing on Twitter is there's 8,000 of this thing. Here's the 4 best.
8 billion humans on this earth. Not all of them are worth following. Here's my 11 friends that are worth following.
Who created that? Did one of our buddies pick that or is it?
I have no idea who started that, but that's
whatever.
The formula.
That is the formula. Using. Well, Ben, all right. What's the first one?
I just read it. It's in what area of my life am I settling?
You go first.
Okay, so what areas of my life am I settling? And by the way, this is called the boys go to therapy because we got to open up a little bit. We got to see what the answer might be. I would say two come to mind. The first is fitness. Like, I think I got kind of comfortable with my workout routine and diet, and I was like, oh, okay, like not as fat as I was. I'm on my way to getting fit. And I just kind of got okay with like, I was kind of settling for like, wow, you're much better than before. But I've been like riding that for like, you know, 12 months now. And now the before is the same as the current because it's like been a while, like 6 months of like the same. And so I just realized this recently and was like, why did I settle here? This isn't the destination. Like I basically was on a road trip and I stopped at the gas station and then unpacked my bags instead of being like, no, this is not the destination. This is the pit stop. I got to get to the hotel. Why is my suitcase open?
You made a lot of progress, though, in a relatively short amount of time. You just got to keep going.
Yeah. So I would say I'm settling there. And the other one I'm settling, I think, is me and my wife. Like, we have two little kids. And there's like, you know, this feeling of like, you know what? Like, we put a lot into work. Okay, then you're putting a lot into your fitness, you're putting a lot into your kids, and it's like, oh, whatever's left over at the end of the day for each other, like, you know, we take what we can get as the scraps of like, you know, the energy, the kind of like, just the effort we put into kind of your relationship. As I think we've both kind of settled on that, which is like, it's fine. They're not leaving. They're not going anywhere. It's fine. We can always do this later when the kids grow up.
Is she going to listen to this?
No, that's the beauty of it.
You should have her listen to this. I think that's good that you said that. Maybe that will make her like you more.
Yeah, especially because I didn't say that she is doing all this. Right? I said we are doing it, which is, you know, the key. All right. What about you? What areas of your life do you think you're settling?
My consistent diet needs to, I think I like to improve that. I looked at my goals over the last 10 years. So I created a goal tracking thing 10 years ago when I was about 21, and I hit all of them except for wanting to weigh 190 pounds. I've always struggled to lose 10 pounds and I've always wanted to do it, but I've never done it. And so I'm sucking at that. The second thing, career wise, I've settled a bit. So I purposely set out a period where I was like 1 year, the sale and plus 1 year, I'm going to chill. I'm just going to read. I'm going to learn. And I still am not ready to like go all in on something. I'm not there yet. And so I'm kind of being a little bit lazy and I feel a little guilt around that. And then I'll do a relationship one. Dude, I'm super dependent on Sarah. Like if someone like wants me to come speak somewhere, I'll be like, Sarah, can you just like handle this? Or like, do you want me to go speak here? Like, let me know. Like, I'm only going to. And oftentimes, because I don't like to fly, I'll be like, by the way, I'm only going if you're available. Like, if you don't go, I don't want to go. Because I enjoy being around her. And I think I should learn to do a few things by myself a little bit more than I have been lately. I just tend to rely on her so freaking much that I need to go do stuff by myself.
Give me one that's a settle that you, I feel like all those settles, maybe that both of us said, are like settles that we're kind of cool with. What's a settle you're not cool with?
The weight thing. Yeah, the weight thing, I'm not cool with that. I'm pissed off. I'm like, why can't I just be consistent? If I was just consistent for like 5 months with a certain amount of calories, I'd be good. I would be good. I would hit it. But it is so freaking tempting. And I just give into that shit. And that pisses me off. What else? I don't know. What am I? I do think that. So tell me if this is a settling thing. I've created a couple little small products in my free time, and I get so excited about making like $500, $100, $1,000 a day. I get so much joy from that. And I'm like, dude, I could crush this if I want to. I can build things that are huge. Why don't I have the motivation to do this? And so I feel soft and like I'm settling in that aspect.
Yeah, I think one that I've seen in myself, and by the way, I don't think that was, I forgot what you said. You said, tell me what you think about this. Like, I agree with you. So I think that was good. I'm thinking more and more that the settling thing, the easiest way for me to pinpoint where I'm settling is when I see the contrast, when I see somebody who's not settled in this area, and I'm like, oh, they're really pushing it beyond where I am right now in this. Like, and it doesn't mean I'm always going to just chase and do what others do necessarily, but it kind of takes me seeing that for me to be like, oh, word. Like this isn't the kind of the spot to just settle down and dig my heels in. And so that's happened to me with money. Like, for example, I've seen people's lifestyle or I've seen people's just people talking about stuff. It's like somebody will be like, yeah, we picked up this project and then we, you know, like a real estate deal. We picked up this deal and we're going to flip it, you know, basically 4 months later. And, you know, we should make $1.5 million on that. And I'm just sort of like, oh, okay. So like their normal, where they have settled for their normal is like what would have been, let's say, an outstanding outcome for me. But like to them, that's the normal course of business. And then I just sort of check myself and I say, all right, do I care? And usually I do care. Usually I do care when I notice those things, because that's why they stood out to me in the first place. And like, sometimes they don't stand out in this way that I'm saying, where I'm saying it all calmly. I'm just sort of like, usually it's like, I'm jealous of them. Or I'm like, I find myself trying to come up with a reason why that's not good. And then I got to pull myself back and be like, oh, or maybe instead of coming up with reasons why that's not good, I should just admit that it's probably good and something that I actually want for myself. And I'm just trying to kind of like mentally in my own justification, tear their shit down a little bit to make myself feel okay. But in reality, maybe I should just say, oh, cool, they showed me something I want. And maybe I've actually just kind of settled here, but I could go further than I currently have.
Do you journal? Do you have a history of journaling or goal setting? At least just like writing down like thoughts or targets that you want to achieve for different ages,
not ages, but like, do you like kind of have ideas in mind, but it's not based on how old I am. Like I've done this.
No,
before.
I don't mean like in the future.
Current age.
What I mean is like when you're 21, were you like, all right, this year I want to accomplish this.
When I was 21, I did. I said, okay, by 30, I used to say by 30, I want to have $1 million in the bank and I had a couple of goofy ones. It's like, I have $1 million in the bank. I want to have gone on Survivor, and I want to, like, you know, I had like two other, like, I don't even remember what they were at this point. And then, like, as I got older, I was like, oh, well, that number needs to be bigger. And then the second one, time isn't really a factor. And like, oh, I don't care about Forbes 30 under 30. That's actually all bullshit. And like, you know, I kind of adjusted my like goals once I like wasn't 21 anymore.
Well, I think it's good to look at those things, because I'll look at all my old journaling and writings, and I'm like, what energy was I putting into there? What was I bummed about? What was I excited about? And then oftentimes I do one of two things. I either try to impress my past self or try to make my future self pumped, where I'm like, what will I be really excited that I did now in 10 years?
So there's this thing, I don't know if you've heard of it. So Chris Sacca, who is you know, one of the kind of best investors of all time, who's one of the biggest investors in Twitter and Instagram and a couple other badass companies, he had this thing which was like, he read out somewhere, I think it was like on the Tim Ferriss podcast or something, he read out a note that he had written to himself, a note that he'd written to himself when he was 20 years old. And he goes, I just found it while we were talking here. So this is perfect. I found the transcript. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you know what I'm about to say?
Yeah. I remember it. I remember it. What did he say? I don't remember exactly what he said, but I remember this episode.
He goes something about, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? He goes, so here I am. I'm 20 years old. I'm living in Cork, Ireland. And we'd start the day drinking at 11:30, blah, blah, blah. And I never heard of an investment banker. At that point, I had never heard of a venture capitalist. And so I just wrote in there, I don't know what the job is called, but I know it's going to involve a lot of talking on the phone, a lot of negotiating, a lot of yelling at people, high risk, high reward, unbelievably high stakes. And I'm going to do it part-time from the mountains, part-time from the beach. Whatever it does, whatever it is, I'm going to be done with it before I'm 40. And then he's like, you know, fast forward. This was, you know, just, I think he was 40, 41. And he basically
like a billionaire,
accomplished almost exactly that. Yeah. So he's like, he's now a billionaire who does exactly that, makes deals. He didn't know what a VC was, but he became a VC, which is that deal. He has a house in Truckee and, you know, another one on the beach. So he had the mountains and the beach thing. And it was like, literally it all played out, and he retired from the game and he was like done with it. And he moved on with his life and he started doing other things. And so, so I always thought that was really cool. And I thought it was cool because it wasn't like these fucking lame goals. It was a description of his life. It was like a painting of his life. It was like a movie scene of his life. And I've noticed that the people who kind of do this, like they kind of call their shot and they manifest it, they don't really call their shot with like some, like, it doesn't feel like Excel. It feels like iMovie. It's not like a bullet point analytical thing. It's like a vision for how their life is going to be and what life is going to feel like. And they don't even know the words to describe it or the route to get there. They're like, but that's it. That thing at the end, that's how it's going to feel. That's what it's going to look like. That's what it's going to sound like.
I'm doing this tonight. This is good. iMovie, not Excel. That's a good one.
If you were going to do like, let's do a kind of off the cuff shitty version, right? Again, we do it for the entertainment. We do it for the people. What do you think would go into that? What comes to mind as your version of that?
I like physical places as opposed to internet places. So I like, I want to have some type of physical land or buildings throughout the country that I can entertain all of my friends all at one time and pay for all of it.
Can I propose something here?
Yeah.
Can I propose we do a 2-minute thing where we just jot down on our note here what we think it is, and we'll just cut that out?
No, because I'm not prepared. I'm not prepared. What's yours?
That's why you got to do it.
What's yours?
That's what I'm saying. We got to write it down. We got to figure it out. Okay, so I think
I'm not ready.
All right. Look at that reaction. This tells you that's what we call resistance when the boys go to therapy. That's we've identified some resistance.
I have to figure this out. This is like such a hard thing to do. Next question, Ben. Fuck.
Are you guys ready for the next question?
Let me give you my scene right now. Okay. My scene that I have in my head is
you're already living where I'm living.
No, dude, my house is like this. I already know the house. It's this big ass house. Everything's fucking white inside. I have a chef like I have today, but it's like on this like giant area. There's people just coming in and out of my house because we're like the fucking lobby. Like my whole life and work is so integrated that like my trainer's showing up, they're having brunch with us. And then you know, I'm having this meeting with this other person, but they're also going to work out with us. And the whole thing is just integrated into one big ass thing. My mom's over, my sister's over because we all live nearby because we all made it. The second thing is I take a nap midday because with no guilt. So zero guilt midday nap. I already know that that is like, that is the, that implies that the rest of the shit worked itself all out. And then the last piece is all I get to do is just meet interesting people and be super curious about them. And then I just either, I don't know, record or type or something like kind of like what we're doing right now. I just take the interesting bits. I put it out there and it's in millions. It's in a million people's ears or eyes, you know, the next day because they are following it. They love the content, they love the content package that I put out. And I never meet those people. I don't have to talk to them. I'm not their consultant. I'm not their motivational speaker. I just kind of, I'm taking little bits of what I'm curious about and I'm putting it into a million people's ears every morning.
I think I think you're practically there. I don't know. You got to get the house and the fancier chef. Dude, you could take a nap now, I'm sure.
Dude, the midday nap right now with kids, that's indulgent. If you take, if you take a nap with kids, that's like, that's not giving the middle finger to your spouse. I'm going to go take a nap right now.
What's the next question, Ben?
By the way, that million people's ear things, that was old. I had said that before we started this podcast. I had told Sully, he was like, what do you want to do next? When I was selling the company and we were on like a fucking 10 mile walk. We just kept walking in the middle of the night. And he was like, tell me more. What are you thinking? I said, dude, I think what I want to do is I just want to have some way that I could just get my thoughts out there and it gets in a million people's, I remember calling it earballs. I said, it's in a million people's earballs in the morning. I said, I just think that that would be so cool if I could just be in a million people's ears while they're on their commute to work or whatever else. And that was before the podcast. Now the podcast is getting close to that.
Yeah, you have that.
All right. Next question, Ben.
And you can go out of order, Ben. Pick the questions that are interesting to you.
Let's go with question 10. You should choose your battles wisely. What battles do I choose?
Oof. Dude, I choose so many petty battles. Like when I'm driving and I see someone behind me and they're driving like an asshole and cutting other people off, I like go out of my way to slow down and purposely like block it. So I'm going just as fast as the fast lane so they can't get by me. Also, I reply.
You're like, I go to their destination.
Yeah, dude, I'm really petty. I'm just, it pisses me off that someone's rude. I also reply to just so many comments that I shouldn't reply to. Where I think someone has said something and it's just kind of ridiculous and I reply to it and there's no reason why I should be doing that. So I pick a lot of really, really, really dumb battles. Your HOA battle that you had, I would die on that one. This would not stand. That's what I would say. I mean, I would go hard on that one. What was the question though? What battles do you pick that you shouldn't?
It's basically, it says choose battles wisely. What battle do I choose? So which is saying, what battle do you want to be choosing? Another way of looking at it is what you said, which is what battles am I stupidly choosing right now that I need to not be choosing?
Dude, I choose so much small stuff. Like I just, for some reason, I stay like hardcore in the dirt. Like, for example, I'm out at my ranch and I've got people here like setting up my Airbnb and stuff. And like people are like doing the stuff, but like I just have to be here and I'm like putting shit together or like, fuck it. I guess I'm going to go rent a car and go to Costco. It's like, no, we're already doing that. I choose the smallest stuff as opposed to leveraging my skill set. And so that is an unwise battle that I should not be picking. Instead, I need to be thinking about much bigger things. And I simply don't. I think having kids might change that. I think there's a world where I'm praying that having a child is going to like somehow like show me the way. You guys could tell me if I'm wrong. But, dude, I pick the smallest. I focus on tiny, tiny, tiny issues.
That's like I have a friend who they're a couple. They're like kind of going through problems right now as a relationship. And then she said something. She was like, I just feel like I need to have a kid. And then that's going to like help us. And I was like, oh, my God, no, that is not the answer. Like, I understand why that will make this relationship better, but it is going to do the exact opposite.
I think it could be the answer, to be honest. Having a dog is like 2% of having a child, not in the sense of I'm taking care of it, but it's like I've got something that I need to protect and take care of. And it makes me a little bit happier. I imagine properly having a human being where you're like, oh, I have to dedicate my life to this person. It's beyond me at this point. I have a feeling that can be very inspiring. And that's why I think a lot of like 35 and 40 year olds who are childless and are like getting messed up on psychedelics all the time and feel depressed. I'm like, dude, just fucking pop out some babies. I bet like you won't be asking yourself, how do I find myself? You're going to say, how do I just like make this kid happy? And like when you dedicate yourself to others, I think you're happier.
Can I read you something cool, by the way, that I just
do you disagree with that?
No, I think you're right in that in two ways. So I think you're right that having a kid definitely takes the focus off yourself. So that eliminates like a huge number of worries that you have, but it replaces them with new worries. If your habit is to worry, guess what? Whatever situation I put you in, you're going to find something to worry about.
It's just better to worry about other people, though. It's more rewarding.
So it is an improvement. It is an improvement. The other thing is that, yeah, some bullshit just gets thrown out the window because you don't have that bandwidth. You don't have that extra time to think about stuff and do stuff and make that trip to Costco because it's just off the table. You don't have the time. And so that's one thing. But it doesn't fundamentally change the nature of the problem, the root cause of the problem. Which would be, you know, like a focus on minor things, because guess what? Then you're going to start to focus on, you know, why your kid's, you know, pinky toe is a little bit crooked and why they have this little rash on their knee and like why they're not eat, why they didn't eat all, you know, a balanced lunch. And like there's a zillion things you could worry about with a kid, and you could even justify them further because I'm a martyr. I'm a great parent for doing so. So you got to be careful with that. I don't think it goes away, but I do think it like changes the problem a little bit.
So what's yours?
Okay, I'll answer the question. I'm going to read you this thing. So the battles I should pick the battles I want to choose are health. So being in the best health that I can be and having a healthy lifestyle for me and the people around me.
Is your wife healthy?
Because
does she eat healthy?
Yeah, she's in and out. She can be, when she's on it, she's super clean. She doesn't have the problem I have of discipline. Like, once she flips the switch, she'll just never eat bad again until she flips the switch off. And then she'll eat Oreos all day. And so it's like, you know, one or the other. And same thing with working out. She's like hardcore intense about that and hardcore intense about her diet. And like, she doesn't waver at all. So, but it's just a matter of what mood she's in. Like, and the mood is like a year long mood, not like a daily fluctuation. So I think health is the first one, because I've seen that once your health goes a little sideways, nothing else actually matters. None of the other battles have like any relevance anymore. I think the second one is like probably the second battle to choose is like, I don't know, probably something around parenting, but I don't even know how to phrase it. Like, I don't know, being like not constantly trying to like rush through parenting and like getting the job done. That's probably the second one, is like the battle of enjoying being patient with my kids. And then the last one is probably like, I do too many projects. I have so many fucking projects at once, and they're all good projects, but they're probably collectively together a bad number of projects. And that's probably the worst one.
I know I always say it, but how many people criticize you about that?
I don't know if my friends and people who actually care about me, like, I don't know, like the people who know me and care about me,
they do.
And the people who don't are like, oh, that's cool, you do so many things. And my friends are like, that's not cool. All these things could be cool, but you got to do them. You got to do them right. And if you're not going to do them, you got to figure out how to like hire somebody who's going to do that thing for you.
Dude, if I was you, I would only do three things. I would do the podcast, because that's not that hard, and it kind of drives the other thing. I would do Milk Road, and I would do investing.
Yeah, the problem is I'm too deep in on e-commerce, and so I gotta like either hire my way out or sell this thing, or I don't know what. I don't know what the other option.
You gotta
are.
Sell it. I think you sell it or something. I think that everyone talks about hiring someone to run shit. You're still like involved somehow. Like, you're not actually. I think that that's actually really hard to do.
I don't know. When you did it for The Hustle, you were pretty good about it, right?
Yeah, but I thought about it all. I mean, I still felt like I was working there, but I didn't do other projects though.
I want to read something to you real quick. There's a thing from Naval that's, I don't know, you said something that reminded me of this. I have a Slack channel called Wisdom, and this is in there. So he goes, he says, the only true test of intelligence is if you get what you want out of life. It's the only true test of intelligence is if you're getting what you want out of life. He goes, there's two parts to this. One is, are you able to hack reality to get what you want? And the more important one was, were you smart enough to figure out what you should want in the first place?
Dude, that's the hard part.
That's the hard part. Exactly. And like, you know, you read this and you nod, and then it's like, have I been smart enough to figure this out in the first place? What do I even want? And then do I like, both you and I, we have developed the skills of hacking reality, but we get a little loose on remembering what we actually want and what doesn't matter, what we don't care about, and like remembering which game to actually play.
Yeah. Bending reality is, in my opinion, the easy part. Knowing what you want is the way, way harder. I don't know.
Right. I'll read you one other part that I really liked. He goes, You live in a society which has a bunch of people in it. So that will train you to play the bunch of people game, the multiplayer game. But only as an individual do you get to stumble on the hidden game, the single player game. And that is the real game. And he says a couple things. He goes, if you had no adversity, it would be a very boring game. So remember, you got to play the game. It's your game. You get to design the board, design the challenge. You get to design the victory condition. And that is the creativity. That is like, you know, you get to decide the purpose of your own life. And in the same way, you get to design what game you're going to play, what the rules are, and what the victory condition is. And if you intentionally done that, you're not playing it. You know, you haven't actually started playing that game consciously yet.
Where did he write that?
I don't know. He said this on like a Twitter Spaces or something like that. This guy, Zach Pogrob, tweeted it out. I liked it.
That's good. Ben, right, what's another question? What's another one?
All right. I think this is an interesting one. What are you letting in? So in other words, like he says, turn off the news. Don't read the comments. Quit interacting with negativity. Think of it as mental fitness. Like what things are you letting in? What noise are you letting in that you shouldn't let in?
Oh, that you shouldn't?
I have a, yeah. What are you letting through the window or the door that actually shouldn't be getting through the through
what
the,
are yours?
Well, I had, you had written something on the doc that I think is interesting. It was about feedback. So let's just zoom it into feedback. What was your question around feedback?
So I have a few ways that I go about doing this, but you could do this when building a product or when just asking people about your personality, which I think you should do. Like, what do I suck? Where do I rock? And what you'll notice, and it's very clear, I tweeted out, what do you like about the podcast? What do you want more of? What do you want less of? And for every person who says they want a longer podcast, there's an equal amount of people who say they want a shorter one. There are some people who say more guests. There are some people who say no guest. And that makes things really hard to figure out feedback. And so I was going to ask you, how do you decide which feedback to listen to and which to ignore?
So I started off like, the way I used to think about this was, dude, feedback is the key. You need a feedback loop. You need to talk to your customers. You need to know your audience. And there was all these like, you know, books written about how important that stuff is. And so I became fucking Mr. Feedback. I would, you know, if I had a project idea, I'm taking the designs out to a mall and I'm stopping people and say, hey, will you give me feedback on this idea? And, you know, every coworker, I was like, hey, I would love some feedback. What do you like about me? What do you hate about me? What's good about me to work with, et cetera. I was fucking Mr. Feedback. And then I started to get what you just described, which is information whiplash, which is, it's like information overload, but it's not just an overload. It's contradictory information.
Yeah.
And so then I'm like, oh shit, what to do? So then I got paralyzed. So then I went to Steve Jobs mode. Fuck feedback. People don't know what they want. Why would I ask them what they want? They don't even know what they want for breakfast. How could they tell me what they want out of this app they've never heard of? How could they tell me how to be a better boss? Blah, blah, blah. People don't know what they want. And I became Mr. Steve Jobs in the turtleneck. Then I sort of realized, well, that's not good either, right? Because now I've isolated myself from actually getting feedback. So I have no signal to go off of. And so now I've come up with a better balance, I think, between the two, which is I seek out feedback from people who I think are going to give me relevant feedback. So I don't just ask everybody. And then the last piece is the feedback is not the answer. It's the question. So when I hear feedback, I'm not looking for the answer to what we should do more of, what we should do less of, how I can be better, how I can be worse. I'm just looking for the feedback to just surface a couple of questions. So for example, if the feedback said, you know, longer podcast, some people say, oh, I want longer podcast. Some people said, I want shorter podcast. It's just a question that comes up, which is, what do I think is the right length of the podcast? What podcasts are great when they're long? What podcasts are great when they're short? You know, what would be a great short version of our podcast? So I use the feedback to ask myself a better question. And then it's my job to come to the answer. It's their job to just give me their opinion, which gives me a question that can ask. And so same thing goes with products, which is when I ask for feedback, we both like this book called The Mom Test. And the central principle is I only get to ask them about their problems. I don't get to ask them what solution they want. And so similarly, when I go ask for feedback now, I'm just looking for them to say things that's going to get me to ask a better question that will get me to come up. And then it's my job to come up with the answer to that. That's the main principle. When in doubt, there's one final thing, which is at the end of the day, I got to like trust myself. And I got to know that ultimately, if I just do the thing I think is right over and over and over again, I will happen to, I might, some people might not like it, but I will ultimately attract the people who love what I do. So that comes back to that, that saying my trainer gave me, which is, who are my customers? The people that love what I do. And it became that simple for me. So that, that's what I fall back to. So it's like, if it was like an if else statement, it's like, if their feedback gives me a clear question and an answer that I know what to do with, great, I'll make an adjustment. But if not, then I'm just going to do what I do. And I know that that will attract the type of person who loves what I do.
I think that I think you can, I always call it like Excel sheet your way to creating a big business. So I think that like, you could just say like, where's the opportunity based off of like traffic demand. And I just hired these people and you could create wealth that way. I don't like when people say you have to be passionate. You don't really have to, you can just excel your way to this. But what I've learned throughout the years is like, it's a lot more fun just to do things that you think is are cool. And typically I can, that's more the feedback that I'll listen to is just like, do I think this is cool? And the second thing when I get feedback is I don't actually care, like you said, what they're saying. I care more about why they're saying it. And so, for example, when people say make the podcast shorter, they're not saying make it shorter. They're saying it's not always that interesting.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And so the, because if something's, you know, really long, it doesn't matter as long as it's badass. Or if I did a, made a 3-hour movie about Sean, Sean's going to watch it. And so it's really not about listening to the actual feedback, but why do I think they're saying it? So that's what I listen to.
All right. This one, you guys get to talk about some other people. This one is, am I surrounding myself with the right people? Who are the 5 I want to spend time with?
Ooh,
powerful question.
That is a powerful question.
So let's just, we'll make it, I think it's a heavy question, so let's make it light. So tell me right now, who are the 5, if you just said, I spend my time the most with these 5 people, who are the 5 people you currently just spend the most time with?
Wife.
Sarah, probably.
Wife,
number
Sarah.
One. Yeah.
Neville Medora, my best friend and lives next door to me. Ramon, who you, a lot of people know, Ramon, yep. Van Meer. And then Jack Smith.
That's 4. You got one more?
I wouldn't put anyone else in those categories. No, that's it.
Your dog?
Well, and you know, I like you guys kind of like, that's pretty in depth, but I would say that that I would end it there.
And all right. So then let's just add one more. Who's somebody you wish was in that 5 that is, that you're not spending as much time as you like in an ideal world you would be?
Steph Smith. I would add Steph Smith.
Whoa.
There. Yeah.
Nice.
I think Steph like Smith is... It's amazing. Just like what?
I was like, just like our podcast listeners. They also want, dude, more Steph Smith. So
every time I talk to her, I like, damn, she's brilliant. She's a very special person. So maybe her, anyone else, like, I do wish like I had like some baller friends. A lot of my friends are like pretty great, but like fucking hanging out with like a Russian oligarch just to see how like some of these crazy people think who are like extreme. I like extreme people. So even though I may think they're a bad person, I would like to hang out with some of these extreme people who are just on extreme ends of success. Or it could even be an athlete. Like, what's it like to hang out with like the person who holds the world record in the marathon? So it would be nice to be around more extreme people.
That's a really good actually twist to this, which is, I think a lot of people have heard this idea of you are the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. And that's true. But there's 2 other groups of people that I think really matter. One is like the equivalent of a bender. It's like, you don't want to go on a bender every day or every weekend, but like twice a year, a bender is a lot of fun. And if you don't do a bender twice a year, if you're not really having one amazing party or, you know, just an all-nighter or some kind of experience that's like a little out there, you kind of are leaving a little bit of life on the table. And so there's some people that are amazing in that capacity that you just, you would never want in your everyday, but they're amazing twice a year hangs with. And I think there's some people that are like that. The other one is, who have you just not even encountered yet? Like, who is just outside of your bubble that it's like, you don't even know what you don't know yet because you just don't hang out with anybody like that. And so you have zero exposure and therefore, you know, it's just like, it's not part of your worldview. It's not part of your mental model yet. So I think that's another,
who are yours?
Like, 2 categories. Who are, on
what
the
are
5
yours?
Or those 2 new categories?
Do the 5 and then the other.
All right. So my 5 would be Sonia, my wife, and my kids. I'll just put it all together. My mom is the next one. So I spend, my mom comes over 1 week out of every month. She stays with us. Ben, who's kind of like my right-hand man, my business partner across Milk Road, across in the fund. He helps with the podcast. He does a bunch of things. So I talk to Ben hours a day. Andre, who I don't think you've met Andre, right?
No.
No. Andre's like kind of like the new Ben. He's like the next Ben. So he's a new guy in the fold on that level. And Andre is kind of amazing because Andre's got this story, that he had some illness, he had something, he caught some bug or got some infection that like, it gave him like kind of like chronic fatigue syndrome or something like that. Like he basically like couldn't get out of bed for like, I don't know, like 2 years or something like that. Like he was in a wheelchair at one point and nobody knew what it was. And it was just like, and then he kind of like recovered from it, but it was like this multi-year thing. And so this motherfucker is the most like grateful person you'll ever meet because he's like, dude, I walked today. And I'm like, you know, like it doesn't take much for Andre to be like high on life. And because Andre's around me all the time, I get that secondary high, you know, the contact high off of Andre. And like, you know, cause he kind of like was just battling and got out of it. And so now he's like every day he like, you could tell he's just savoring every day, like as if you haven't eaten in like 2 weeks and you're having your first meal. That's how Andre's like. And so I love that about Andre.
And who are the other two?
The other one is Suli, who's our mutual buddy. And I don't hang out with him that much because he moved, but he's a partner in one of my businesses. And so I talked to him, you know, because of that. But the one downside is now that he's like an official business partner, we don't really just like talk to shoot the shit anymore. It's like we kind of, anytime I'm talking to him, I'm sort of talking to him always as if he's my investor or business partner instead of just catching up, you know. So I guess that's probably the downside. And then so those are the five that I'm currently hanging out with the most. I would put you next as we hang out, you know, 2-3 hours a week doing this, so that's more than most people. And then the one I wish I hung out with more was Ramon, because Ramon is like the best human on earth. So, you know, the more Ramon in my life, the better human I would be, just, you know, by default.
I completely agree. When he teaches me a lot, he's a very thoughtful person. I learn a lot from him.
And then the category that I was saying, the people I'd have no exposure to, is like, I basically have no exposure anymore to people that are in high school and college, which is like actually pretty important as an investor and like, you know, person of the world to know, like, what it's like. Oh, I forgot. I used to think about these stupid things and they were the most important things in my life. Or like, oh, wow. You know, we didn't have phones, so we couldn't do these things, you know, that they're doing now in high school or college. So I have like zero exposure to that. You know, like people in third world countries, like, you know, when I went down to Mexico, I was like, oh, wow. Like, I kind of forgot, like, just how simple and like different life is for most people on earth. And like, you know, I used to live in Indonesia and in China and stuff like that. So like, I definitely was in it every day. But now, you know, I'm just sitting in the burbs in California, so it's easy to forget that. So I think I have a lot, like, my bubble is pretty tight right now. I think I should pop that intentionally once in a while.
Do you want to do one more question, Ben?
Yeah, we're doing five questions. Five questions seems like a nice round number.
And you, Ben, you can remix it because some of these are sort of the same. So you could just ask a different question. You're a good question asker in general. So you can ask a different question.
I've been thinking about one of these. So let's go with this one. In what ways am I in my own way?
Oh, I can say that one easy. I lose my temper and I get very emotional where I'm like, no, fuck this. This is wrong. We have to do it this way. And I have lost a lot of money for doing that. For like, let's just say like it's an employee who I think like has maybe underperformed, even though they talk like they're hot shit. I would just fire them as opposed to like, well, we could definitely salvage this. Like there's lots of ways to salvage things and make things better. So it's a net positive, but more often than not be like, well, no, I'm out. I don't want to deal with the headache. I'm over it. And that is a very emotional decision. I make so many emotional decisions. Sometimes it's ego. Oftentimes it's temper. But mostly if it's like, oh, I think this person is trying to get one over them on me. Like, fuck them. I want to crush them. No, I'm not doing, you know what I mean?
Vengeance.
I make a ton. Yes. I make a ton of emotional decisions as opposed to practical decisions.
That's interesting. All right. I got two. I have one that's real, but
is that true? Have you seen that with me? Cheesy.
Yeah, for sure. You've been mad at me sometimes. And I'm like, because you think I'm trying to like get one over on you. And I'm like, dude, I'm really not. And then once you realize I'm not, like, your whole perspective changed right away. And I was like, oh, that's what you thought? Like, oh, I had no idea, because I wouldn't, like, it's so different than the way I think. So I couldn't understand it, basically. It was not
we can give a real example. I got mad at you for being late. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about this. He thinks he's better. And it was reality was like, no, dude, my baby was sick, or like, you know, I like she was in the bath and it took forever to get her out. And that's like a legitimately good excuse. More innocent,
like even a bad excuse, which was just like, dude, I was sitting here. I just lost track of time. I'm not doing anything. I'm not more important. I'm not like a diva. I'm not trying to do that. Like, I feel horrible every time I do. Like, sometimes I literally don't even have a good excuse. But even that was fine with you. It was just like, and as long as you didn't know I was sort of like actively doing it, it didn't bother you. You know what I mean?
No, like, it doesn't bother me. Or another thing that I do all the time, and I think everyone should learn from me, and I'm working hard at it, and I made this mistake, is replying really quickly to text-based messages. So whether that's an email, anything where it's like, dude, it's okay if you sit on this for an hour or even a day or even 5 days. Sometimes I'll get shit, like a text or an email, and I'm like, oh no, F that. And I quickly reply and I'm like, oh, I should have just sat on that for like 3 hours. What was I thinking?
Yeah, that's actually a great one. That's a great answer for me too. I'm massively disorganized, which affects everything. So it's like replying, like there are so many emails and text messages that like people are either like offering me something, they're trying to help me, and I'm just not replying. And people take it very personally. As you know, maybe I would too, if I felt like I was getting blown off by this person, or I'll just miss a deal that like, is just like a clear win for me because I just don't reply. Yeah, or I forget to reply. I don't see it.
I would say fuck them. You know, I actually don't think you should. I've been struggling with that too. And lately I'm just like, I'm just not going to feel bad about replying to these people. Like, here's the most douchiest thing I could say, but just subtract this by like a lot. And that's the reality. Imagine you're Justin Timberlake and people like are always presenting you with stuff. You're just like, dude, I don't care. I'm going to do what I want to do. Of course, we are not that big a deal, but like a much, much smaller version where there's like lots of opportunities. And I'm just like, I'm just going to ignore all of them. I don't expect JT to reply to a DM. Do I?
Yeah, that's true. But I'm talking about like people who I'm doing business with, or they're my friends or something like that. Like, those are people I do intend to be replying to, or I've asked them for something and they gave it to me and I forget to do something with it.
But there's what do you think, Joe? What do you think?
Laziness there. Like, imagine you're Joe Rogan. Check.
How much is that?
I don't want to show the check on screen, but this is a $13,000 check that's just been sitting here for like 6 months and then it expired. And so now I just had to go like get a new check. And then I got this is the new check after the other one expired, and I still haven't deposited this one. Another month has gone by. Like, that's how shitty I am. And it's just sitting here because I'm just disorganized for no reason. Or the same thing with like my company's book. So here's the bad way it plays out, which is I've never hired a bookkeeper. And so I'm like, oh yeah, like, I don't know, like, aren't the transactions just like on the credit card? And
no,
like
the they've got to ask you.
And, like,
they
I guess at the end of stuff. The year, I'll just cram for my taxes final and just figure this out. And so now I'm like learning, oh, how do people do this? Oh, they hire bookkeepers and then they like, okay, gotcha. So like there were just things that are just messy in my world. That's me getting in my own way. You know, it cost me a lot of money to have messy books or not reply to certain emails. So I think that's me getting in my own way. The other one was just staying up late, which is, again, this is so boring cliche. I'm almost embarrassed to even say it on the podcast. Because
how late do you stay up?
Nobody gives a fuck. Like, on average, I was staying up till 2 or 3 in the morning, and then I'd wake up at 9. And I just started, like, last week, I was just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna sleep early. And it solved, like, 5 of my biggest problems. It's like, my diet cleaned up, because I no longer late night snack or eat, like, junk, which is all I would do, right? If I had dinner at 7, and now it's 1 a.m., and I'm hungry, like, guess what? I'm not
nothing
eating
good happens after midnight.
At that time.
Nothing good happens yeah, exactly. after midnight. It could be eating sleep, or it could be fighting.
Yeah, exactly. It's like my sleep was shitty. My work was shitty. I was editing The Milk Road at night. Now I sleep at like 10:30 or 11. I wake up at 6:30 or 7 in the morning. I write The Milk Road and it's, or edit The Milk Road and it's done. But, and like by the time the kids wake up, like I've already like finished my work day almost. And so I just cleaned that up and it cleaned up like 5 other things. But again, so fucking cliche to say sleeping early that I bleep this whole thing out. Make it mysterious instead.
Do you remember how regimented Rob Dyrdek was about tracking his time and like waking up at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. or whatever he did? I actually like, if that's what makes him happy, do it. And I also respect how crazy he is about that. I think I like extreme people. Part of me was like, ugh, but that's like, you don't need to do that. But then the other part is like, that would be kind of cool to do for like 2 or 3 weeks just to see what would happen. Just what would happen if you do get up at 6 a.m. and you are like, you have a very strict schedule. I actually do think that that sounds kind of fun to try it once in a while.
What time do you sleep and wake up typically?
Last night, I couldn't go to bed. I went to bed at 1 or 2 and I got out of bed at 7. I normally always get out of bed at 7.
But Ben, are you super regimented with your schedule?
I'm not productive, though, usually. I'm not productive until about 9 or 10.
So my baby wakes up at 6 in the morning, usually. So that's when I'm up. And I try and go to bed around like 10, 10:30. And then once or twice a month, I'll go to bed at like 3 a.m. because I need to get something done.
That's why you go to bed at 3 a.m.? You're not like going out and doing shit? Wait, do you drink? Do you drink or do drugs?
No. When it's usually like...
God, this is the lamest trio ever.
When I do How to Take Over the World episodes, I usually do a bunch of it in one sitting that I'll do from like 9 p.m. to like 3 or 4 a.m. I'll do that twice a month.
Sean,
let me recap these five questions. I drink if like the occasion calls for it, but not with any regularity, no.
But do you get drunk?
I used to, but no. Like last 5 years, I have not been getting drunk.
And do you do any drugs? God, that's crazy. What a bunch of prudes.
I just drink green smoothies, bro. I don't even drink coffee.
We are so lame. All right, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to recap the five questions. So the five questions were, in what areas of my life am I settling right now? The next one was, am I surround? Oh, no, that's not it. Oh, yeah. Choose your battles wisely. What battles am I choosing right now? And what do I want to choose? So what areas of my life am I settling? Choose your battles wisely. What battles do you want to choose? Number three, what am I letting in that I need to shut out? That's noise and information and opinions from the outside world. And then am I surrounding myself with the right people? Who are the five people I want to spend the most time with? And what was the fifth one? Did we do five?
Yeah. Question five was in what ways am I in my own way?
Oh yeah. In what ways am I in my own way? What are the things you're doing that gets in your own way? Those are the five. Ben, which one of those questions, when we set them, did you go off on a tangent thinking for yourself what your answer is? Which one shook you? One of these questions should shake you.
The first question shook me. In what areas of my life am I settling? Okay. You guys are looking at me. I thought maybe I'd get away with not actually giving you the answer. Cause that's one that penetrates to your soul, yeah. But you both were just like, you're going to answer right now. And like for you, both of you talked about like health and fitness stuff. And one area in which I settle a lot in my life is like, I get super concerned about environmental pollutants, especially like plastics and microplastics and like stuff like that. And I always feel like a psychopath when I talk about it because everyone else is like, oh, what, like plastics? And I feel crazy because I'm like, no, actually, like, this isn't a conspiracy theory. Like the research is out there that like all these microplastics are like crashing our testosterone levels and like disrupting our endocrine systems and stuff. Like I'm not crazy, but the fact that everyone else is like, whatever, makes me feel even crazier. And so a lot of times,
a weird obsession.
I just like settle, I compromise, and I'm like, look at my baby, like putting this plastic toy in her mouth, and like a part of me dies, and I'm just like, whatever, I settle. I'm not going to fight this fight right now. But it is something that...
Do you have plastic Tupperware?
We have plastic Tupperware that I wish we would just like throw away.
So just do it.
Dude, that is not at all where I thought you were going with that answer when you first said it, because you were like so... It was like weighing so heavy on your heart, and that's what it was. So
it matters a lot to me, Sean.
Most fucking random answer.
Is rubber is like a what do they call like a binky? What is a pacifier thing? The pacifier. What is that rubber? I don't even know what that is. Is that plastic?
Yeah. So most of the time, no, they won't do plastic in pacifiers. So they'll either do silicone, which is better, or they'll do rubber. Yeah, which is also better.
And rubber is better. Okay, right?
Silicone, I like have my doubts about, but it does not have like the same proven track record of disrupting your endocrine systems the way plastics do.
Do you reuse water bottles?
No. In fact, I try not to use disposable water bottles because a lot of times they leach.
what do I go watch or read that's going to scare the shit out of me?
There's a Joe Rogan episode that I'll link up in the show notes where he talks with, she's a Harvard researcher who does a bunch of this stuff, and she's really good. And it will scare you a lot.
Yeah, dude, plastic's pretty bad. And then, like, you don't know that, Sean? You microwave plastic, don't you?
Only on this podcast. Yeah, I microwave everything, and everything's in plastic in my house. So I'm like, oh shit, okay. So I've heard this, but I've never got shook yet. Where I'm like, oh, take action in this. But that's why I ask, what do I need to go watch that's gonna like trigger me? Where I need to be like, I will go and, you know, make a like dramatic change in my
house. I'll link it up, but like right, the short of it is basically like, our testosterone levels are decreasing at 1% per year. Fertility levels are just like crashing. And it's not just people who want to have children less, like people who are trying to have children are able to have them at much lower rates than in the past, to the point where it's like, and our plastic use is increasing so much that they're like, in 50 years, we're not sure that anyone is going to be able to have unassisted children anymore.
But how do they know plastics cause that, or, you know, versus just...
Because they do studies of with rats, and they're able to demonstrate it, the correlation.
Good answer. That was a very good answer.
And what's an example of something you swap out that's like a big culprit for plastic? Like, most people are doing this, but if you swap this, that solves like, you know, 20% of the battle,
right?
Well, so the biggest thing that she said was never heat plastic. That is like, if you can do one thing, it's never heat up plastic. So like, if you have a water bottle with water in it, like, yes, that will leach some plastic into your system. It's not great. But if you leave it out in the sun, it heats up to 100 degrees, you're going to get like 10 times as much plastic. So it's not eating things hot from plastic.
But how do you reconcile that fact with the fact that you smoke? You told me that you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day.
Noted chain smoker, Ben Wilson. That's what people know me for.
How do you do both?
Well, and
how do you have 24 Newports a day? You're telling me not to microwave plastic.
You know, it's just one of those mysteries, Sam. I don't know how to explain it.
And how do you, can you test to see how much plastic?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would love to do it if you can. I don't know that you can.
I got a new business that we're going to talk about on Monday. That's going to address that, by the way. I was all prepared for it today.
Really?
Did you say that? What is it?
It's called Float. Did you see it in the doc? It's called Float. What is it? What's the URL? Is it called Float, Ben? Where's my fucking read? It's called...
No, it's called Fount.
Fount. Sorry. Fount.bio. Fount. It's basically a $5,000 a month concierge service where they test your blood and tell you all about your body. It's very expensive, but sounds incredibly cool.
For $5,000 a month, you're probably touching my body.
Well, we'll see. Maybe for maybe it'll make women to actually want to touch your body.
Ooh,
maybe we'll do one better.
We're getting tested over here. $5,000 a month. What? $5,000 a month? That's such an absurd number. You're doing this?
No, I'm not doing it, but I think it's close to beta. $5,000 a month. Would I do it? I would sign up for 3 months for sure. I think you could do it in 3 month increments. For $15,000, yeah, I would try that. Dude, I had a concierge doctor one time for like a year when I was really sick, and it was $25,000 for a year, and it was mostly amazing. Also, I understand why rich people and how rich people can get access to so many drugs. Because like, if I wanted to, I could just like text the doctor and be like, hey, can you refill this Xanax for me? Or like, hey, I need some more Oxy. And you're paying them so much money that it seems like they're willing to do that. It is kind of crazy. Check. This took a turn.
Hey, all right, do we have time? We're way over time. Do I have time to ask you guys one more question?
As long as it's 5 minutes or less.
Okay, I think you can be 5 minutes or less. I'm just curious about this. I don't know why I thought of this as we were asking the five questions. But if you were to like simulate your life 1,000 times, what do you think the ceiling is and what do you think the floor is? In other words, like, are there a few little things that if they broke in the wrong way, like Sam Parr is working at a McDonald's in Missouri right now, or like a few breaks where if things had broken the wrong way, you would be like worth $100 billion, one of the richest men in the world. Like, what do you think your floor is? What do you think your ceiling is? And do you think you ended up about what your average is?
I think in my case, I could tell you, let's
set the ground rules. The ground rules are same genetics and same like family. Not like I'm born in a different country.
It's just a few little random variables get changed. You make a few different decisions as you go through life, but same family, same situation, same person.
I think I was not far from being like homeless, alcoholic, drug addict. Like, I think that was actually potentially in the cards, or just like in jail because I would con people and steal. I think a lot of people honestly could say that, though. Like, if you ever like do certain drugs, like, oh man, like it's actually, I could see myself living on the streets. The best of like the limit. I think like a really attainable thing is I could have not sold my company, and I think it could have been worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and I could have been worth many hundreds of millions of dollars by the time I was 50. I think that could have done that. I think I could have pulled that off if I was willing to put the work in.
Yeah, but you'll probably end up there now. Anyways, you're 30 now. That's 20 more years.
Yeah.
Given where you're at now, it's pretty likely that you end up over $100 million.
It's very likely that I'll be
worth 20 more years.
It's almost guaranteed I'll be worth nine figures.
I mean, it's almost certain.
Yeah, so then I don't have a good answer to that.
Exactly. So you peaked. You got one of the good rolls of the dice. I don't think, I mean, obviously there's some scenarios where, yeah, I end up, you know, in jail, drug addict, whatever. But I don't think that's like the realistic floor for me. I think the realistic floor for me was probably like...
working at Twitch forever.
You know, no, not even. Like, you know, working as a lab assistant at fucking, Greenville University's like biology department or some shit like that. Like, you know, basically some job that was like, I got on some track that didn't really have a merit-based system. It was a time-based system. So like, you know, you basically just get rewarded for how long you've been in the game and not like how much impact you've been able to make. And it might have been in a very kind of like I was very close to a complete non-business field, right? I was like about to go to med school. So, you know, I was very likely going to be in a different thing. But like, even if I hadn't done the med school path, you know, just being a engineer somewhere or being a, project manager somewhere was extremely likely for me. Had I just made one or two different decisions kind of at some point. The more interesting question is like, how far off the peak am I? And I think I'm pretty far off the peak, to be honest with you. And in fact, you know, Ben, you were there when we had David Freeberg on the podcast. And I told him, Sam, I was trying to butter him up. I was like, dude, so you've created not one, not two, but pretty much three $1 billion companies. If you know, he created Climate, which is a $1 billion company. He created Metromile, which is basically a $1 billion company. And he created the Production Board, which is a $1 billion company. And I said, you've done that. And, you know, if I went back to you at age kind of 18, 19, 20, you're in college, and I told you, hey, man, this is how it all shakes out. You're going to create three separate $1 billion companies in this like kind of space, science space. What would you have said? Would that have been unbelievable to you? Could you have believed that? He goes, honestly, I'd probably have been disappointed. And I was like, what?
Why?
Because I think two things. Like, one is he wasn't really... like money wasn't the driving force. And then the second piece is like, I don't think he feels like he's had a big impact on the world yet. Metromile exists and okay, Climate exists. But like, you know, what he's trying to do now with like Canada and other stuff like that is like, he's like trying to find like, be like the way we produce food is going to change, or like the way we produce pharmaceuticals is going to change. Like that's the type of swing he goes for, which is like, the world used to produce things in factories and farming and blah, blah, blah. And now we do it in a laboratory, blah, blah, blah. Like that, he's trying to fundamentally change the means of production. And so I think that's what he meant. But I was kind of blown away by that answer. And that's the type of thing when I remember I said, like, you hang out with that X Factor person who like just sort of like stuns you into a different, like when I said, when do I realize I'm settling? Is when a guy who's created a $3 billion company says, I probably would have been disappointed if I knew this was the outcome. It makes me think, wait, what is this guy even going for? What is this guy's scoreboard if he doesn't think this is a win? And then what does that make me think about my scoreboard? How could I update my scoreboard? Not to match his, but to like, let's definitely question it, right? Like, let's not
a billionaire?
Just keep it the same as it's been for 10 years.
Is he a billionaire?
I don't think he's personally a billionaire now. Probably
like 300 million in that ballpark.
I think he said on the podcast that he hasn't hit a billion. So I think close, but I don't think he said it.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny how you can achieve just what most every single person on earth would consider like the top of the top of the top of the top. And you're like, that's funny.
I
how
remember
that works.
Once I Googled my mentor and kind of business, my investor's net worth. And I remember being like, and then I Googled a whole bunch of celebrities. Like, so I think at that time, like his kind of like my ballpark approximate, like my triangulated net worth for them was like 700, 800 million. And then I Googled like Britney Spears and it was like 25 or 50. And then I was like, wait, Britney, I was like, he's like more than 10 times richer than Britney Spears. I was like, okay, Alex Rodriguez. I remember when he signed the biggest MLB contract ever. It was a 10-year, $225 million contract or $250 million contract at that time. And I remember being like, oh my God, he's getting three. He already has three times A-Rod's contract. And it just like, I just Googled every celebrity I could think of. And
like, Michael,
worth more than all of them.
Did you know that you're richer than Ryan Sheckler?
I think I literally said that. I was like, you're 15,000 Jermaine Dupri's.
Dude, he's probably even richer than Denzel Washington. This guy's amazing.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, easily. Watch, you know, Denzel net worth.
Dude, I bet you Denzel's got to be worth a 100 at least. Been right, in the Denzel game Washington for a while.
Piss poor 280. He's a double Denzel, you know, like, come on, man.
That's awesome. All right, I'm out.
All right, this episode is brought to you by Mercury. They are the finance platform of choice for over 200,000 companies. Shouldn't be surprised because I use it myself for not one, not two, but I have 8 different Mercury accounts. I have 7 for different companies that I'm a part of, and then I have my own personal account because now they have personal banking, which is a really cool feature. I highly, highly recommend it. Like I said, I use it myself. And the reason why is because the way that Mercury works is beautiful. It's very intuitive. And you could tell that it's actually made by a startup founder. It's an entrepreneur. You could tell it's made by somebody who used other banking products in the past and didn't like all the different rough edges and annoyances and decided to, you know, actually fix it himself. And really, any type of entrepreneur you are, let's say you're an agency, well, one of the things every agency has to do is be able to send invoices, easily create them, send them to customers, and stay current on your balances with all your customers. Well, you can do that inside Mercury. And so I think that Mercury is great. Highly recommend you check it out. And thank you for sponsoring the show.
For more information, check out mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Check show notes for details.